from here on the brain. And in fact, in the model or in the discussion I have today, I'm not even going to, well, there's no tension term hiding over here. So it's basically that Einstein term that governs the dynamics of the brain. Now, that's interesting, as we heard this morning, because the behavior of gravity is changed on very large distance scales. At short distances, in some sense, this term dominates, and I get four-dimensional gravity. But on very long distance scales, this term kicks in, and what I see is five-dimensional gravity. Further, one of the reasons this caught a lot of attention is this model may provide an explanation of cosmic acceleration, but without introducing a cosmological constant anywhere. In the bulk here, I've got no energy density term. And similarly, I said I wasn't going to introduce a stress or a tension term here, so there's no vacuum energy that I'm introducing in either of those actions. And yet, what we'll find, or what I'll explain later, is that you can find a solution where the brain is accelerating. So those are the positive things. Of course, the history of the DGP model is that it was a controversial one. Things went back and forth. There were pros, and well, one might see this as a pro. Very early on, certain groups of string theorists said that, well, we think we can realize something like DGP model in certain string theory constructions. However, more recently, other groups said that, well, DGP gravity suffers from a certain, well, certain characteristics which indicate that there's no way I can have a UV completion for this theory. Now, I've broken Justin's rule here in that I'm supposed to refer to everybody in the audience as often as possible. And so I should have added a reference here to the chairman of the session who questioned this analysis here. But the net is that there's some discussion or there's some back and forth, there seem to be some contradictory remarks in the literature about whether DGP gravity really can be embedded in some consistent framework. Another problem that arose was that various groups looked at this, or the perturbations in this model, and they found that there were ghosts and even tachyons. However, there were other groups that looked at this analysis and claimed that the theory was stable or that the ghosts were irrelevant. And so again, there's some kind of controversy that appeared in the literature over this point. Okay.
Any conclusion based on that, that's very different from...
Fine.
Well, there's another way of stating those the claims of these papers. That's fine. These are different claims.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the claim I'm going to make? Well, the claim I'm going to make is that as it's given, this model is a bad model. And what is it that I'm going to do that's different? Well, I'm supposed to be taking a new perspective, or my title said I was. And one way you'll know that I'm taking a new perspective is I'm never going to try and write down a propagator anywhere. The perspective I'm taking is the perspective of five dimensions. This is a theory in five dimensions here. And so I'm going to look at this model as a theory of Einstein gravity coupled to an unusual kind of matter, namely these brains that are described by this action here. And we'll see where that takes us.
Well, one of the things I'd like to talk about, though, first, is where does this self-accelerating solution come from? And so to do that, I have to describe how one constructs solutions for DGP gravity. And so basically, I have to look at the equations of motion. And so in the bulk, away from the brain, basically, I just have the vacuum Einstein equations. Then I'm going to have a certain set of equations that describe how the brain sources the gravity or sources the bulk field. And so those typically go by the name the Israel junction conditions, although I know I've given this lecture in front of Werner Israel, and he didn't recognize that this had anything to do with anything he ever studied. Some technical details here are in the way I've written these equations, I'm going to assume a certain symmetry that both sides of the brain are the same.
And I've also assumed over here, I didn't include any extra TMU nu or any extra sources from matter on the brain. And so basically, though, over here in Werner or in these junction conditions, ordinarily for an ordinary brain, what I would have put here is a tension term. But what we saw is we replaced the action with this Einstein term on the brain. And so what we're getting over there is some geometric term in replace, which is replacing that ordinary stress tensor. Now, how do I use that to actually solve or produce a solution? Well, I'm going to use a technical technique that's known as cut and paste. And this is something that Cedric originally did. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to solve these bulk equations. And so the simplest solution that I can think of there is just five-dimensional Minkowski space. That's a simple solution of these equations. Then I want to introduce a parameterization for my brain, the trajectory that my brain is going to take. And so I just write down a simple FRW metric here. So this was five-dimensional. Here's a four-dimensional cosmology for my brain. And that brain is following some trajectory in this bulk space. And so I have to tell you how I embed the brain into the bulk space. And I just do something simple. I take the size here, the radius of my cosmology to match the radius in the five-dimensional space. And then I'm imagining cutting and paste. Well, I'm cutting this geometry along that trajectory, pasting it again with another copy of itself, hence the times two here. And then I'm supposed to apply these junction conditions to determine the trajectory that A follows. So Cedric went through that exercise, and the simplest solution that comes out, or a simple solution that comes out of that exercise, is the following, namely the scale factor is proportional to Akash. And that's something that we hopefully all recognize as if I plug that into my FRW metric, this geometry is just four-dimensional de Sitter space. And so I've got an accelerating geometry here on the brain. Even though I didn't introduce any vacuum energy anywhere. And so that's the self-accelerating brain solution. I didn't quite tell you the whole story there because I said there was some kind of cut and paste. And so just to complete the story, I should say that what I had was my Minkowski space. I had this trajectory implicitly, which is now given by this equation, in Minkowski space. I said that I cut out a piece of the space, and so what I actually did is I cut out the center of the space, the part that's inside this hyperboloid, and I threw that away, and so I'm pasting the outside to another copy of itself, and that's what's giving the solution. There's also another solution to these equations, namely the normal branch, and it's the normal branch because it's just a flat brain that sits there. It doesn't do anything, well, there's no acceleration. It does perhaps what you might expect when there's no energy density. It's just a flat brain, a flat four-dimensional brain embedded into Minkowski space. But the interesting one then is this self-accelerating solution. So some comments about that are it's accelerating, and so you might want to use that to describe our present universe. We might want to adjust the phenomenology of our model to realize the present universe. And so that says then that the Hubble scale here, which was given by this ratio of Planck scales, the five-dimensional Planck scale and the four-dimensional Planck scale, has to be related to our present Hubble scale. On the other hand, this really was the Planck scale in four dimensions. And so combining those two, what we find is that the ratio of these two Planck scales, rather than being, say, of order one that you might have suspected, to get the phenomenology to work here, I need a very large ratio. There's a large discrepancy between those two scales. Now that's, there's a very small scale that I'm trying to explain. And so it's not surprising that I have to introduce a new small scale into the model to get the appropriate phenomenology, but I'm just pointing that out. It's well known, everybody, it's not.
But there is a fine-tuning, right? So, for instance, if I want to describe electron today for neutrino, which is the mass, is it a fine-tuning from
your... Well, as you described this morning, I've got a chiral symmetry, and so technically it's natural. I don't recognize any symmetry in this model. Well, okay.
Here is geographic separation of two scales, because the stuff on the brain just denormalizes the brain stuff and the bulk stuff. And on the bulk stuff, so these are stable.
Okay. So there is a ratio of scales here that's very interesting. What Greg is telling me is that in fact it's not technically it's not a fine tuning, but there's still this interesting scale. Another aspect of this geometry is that in fact, from the point of view of relativity, I would refer to it as a space-time wormhole. By that I mean just that I have, in the geometry, I have a large asymptotically flat region, I go to the center, I pass through some interesting geometry, and I'm connected then to another large asymptotically flat geometry. But there's a large literature on wormholes, and so one might suspect that there are going to be problems associated with that. One of the questions that naturally arises is, don't I need negative energy densities?
And while the answer there is yes, there's no contradiction, and I'm writing this equation down again in the way, these are the Israel junction conditions. I'm writing it down in the way, though, that I would have naturally written it down had I thought of it in terms of the junction or the extrinsic curvature, a source term for the brain. This would have been the stress term or the energy the tension term for an ordinary brain. What we said was that got replaced by this geometric term. So it's not surprising then if I had a tension term, this would have satisfied some positivity constraints. But here I've got just a geometric term, which I know isn't going to satisfy any positivity constraints. And so effectively, what this does in the self-accelerating solution is produce a negative energy density or a negative tension for the brain. There are other problems that you might worry about for wormholes, like closed time-like curves. Those are still present if you think of the wormhole as connecting two distant regions in the same Minkowski space. But of course, this isn't a big problem. I can invoke something I'll call a Z2 orbifold. Rather than thinking of the brain as connecting two distinct spaces, I can just think of it as a boundary of the space-time. Okay, fine. So the next step is that we might look, I'm just going to look at a new class of solutions. The first step in building solutions was to find a solution of the five-dimensional five-dimensional Einstein equations. And so here's a solution. It's five-dimensional Schwarzschild. The one funny thing that you might notice about that, though, is I put the wrong sign in for the mass term. And so, in fact, the sign or the mass of that solution is negative. Now, usually we think of that as a heinous solution because there's a singularity here at the center of the space. And so we wouldn't consider that ordinarily if I'm doing five-dimensional gravity. But again, the rule here was that I'm only using that as a tool to build this brain solution, and part of the construction was removing the center of the space and throwing it away. And so one suspects that, in fact, what I'm going to be able to do is, as far as this theory is concerned, use this negative energy Schwarzschild solution and build a smooth cosmology. So I don't have analytic solutions that I can show you in this instance, but I go through the same steps. I have a bulk, I have geometry on the brain, the embedding, and then rather than an analytic solution, I can describe the solutions with this equation here. This morning that was described, or a similar equation was described as the Hubble equation, but I've written it in this way because I can recognize it, or I can gain some intuition to it, because I can think of it as the Hamiltonian constraint for a classical particle with a fixed energy here propagating in some unusual potential, and that potential then depends on the mass term there. So that equation probably isn't very informative, but I can draw some pictures. This is what it looks like when mu is positive, i.e. the mass is negative. This was the case when mu was zero. It was just a parabola that rolled down to minus infinity. And then there's the case mu greater than zero, mu less than zero, which means the mass is, or the energy is actually positive. And so what I've got is an effective energy. The interesting thing, though, is that when I tune the parameter mu, sometimes the effective energy sits here, and what I get is a cosmology that comes in, or a trajectory that comes in, bounces off the potential and heads out. More interesting is the case when I, in some instances, in fact, I'll find the effective energy is up there, and I'll run into interesting singularities. So again, sorry? You went this far, yes, and implicitly for positive mu. I'm just going to just go through in detail what you find for the negative energies, or not really. I don't have time. In any event, when mu equals zero, this is just so that term disappears. You have the parabola. The trajectory is one that comes in from infinity, hits the barrier, and heads out. So that's the cosmology that we had before. It was a cosh, so it starts out at infinity, reaches a minimum, and then heads out. If you turn, so there's some trajectory like that. If I turn on mu, I'm dragging the potential down, and so it has an attractive force on the brain. It comes in a little bit further and then bounces out to infinity. So that's when mu is less than this scale. If I crank it up higher so that I've exceeded that scale, in fact, what I've done is I've dragged this down so that the minimum here is less than minus one, or it's less than the effective energy. In that case, the brain is going to come all, or the trajectory comes in all the way to zero. At that point, I hit a singularity, and the model doesn't tell me, or isn't sufficient to continue past that singularity. It could be that what happens there is a singularity emerges, or it could be that there's some sense in which the brain can pass through the singularity and cut out again to complete the cosmology in that way. In any event, the interesting thing about these trajectories, I would say, is that if I focus on the geometry or the setup down here at a very early time, I have smooth initial data, and so there's no obvious reason to rule them out. It's true that the model doesn't tell me what the complete evolution is, but I'm starting with some regular initial data in the problem.
Why do you expect the classical field to tell you something about singularity?
Sorry?
The singularities would be, should the quantum theory of gravity should tell you something about singularity, but not the classical.
Right, that's what I said.
Yeah, but this is the classical model, yeah. Which.
Right.
So why would you expect this to resolve this in your life?
No? I don't. That's what I said.
Oh, that's what I said.
Okay. Okay, there's also the case where the mass or the energy is positive, but I won't go through that. The bottom line here is that what you find is that the spectrum of BGP is unbounded from below. There are solutions with negative energy and arbitrarily negative energy. And basically what it is this self-accelerating brain is shielding me from a bulk singularity. In fact, these solutions that I showed are very symmetric, but it's easy to imagine how to build more general solutions, again, with negative energies. Given that we have this result here, that the spectrum is unbounded from below, you'd expect that the theory is unstable. There are some other comments that we made in the paper about tunneling, but I'll pass over that. But the summary then in our paper is that there are various problems from a, or pathologies from a 5D perspective, namely these ideas, well, you may run into problems thinking about the wormhole, thinking about the geometries as wormholes. That, of course, you can fix, thinking of them as using some boundary condition. The spectrum is unbounded from below, which is the main message that I have here today. And there may also be problems with the spontaneous creation of these brains. So then the message that we've got, or where we've gotten to, is that this model is pathological, and so it doesn't really provide, or does not provide, a consistent framework where I might, for instance, propose new tests or propose a new cosmological phenomenology which I can compare against experiment. But in common with Scott's, well, the theme of Scott's talk, the last talk, what I want to stress is that I've said that there's a certain model here, and it displays certain pathologies. And so that particular model isn't a good one to work with. But these just present, then, a challenge for any UV completion or a proper theory. So as long as you give me more time. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So which one are you discussing now?
It's the theory and not the branch.
Well, it's the theory.
What Rob has shown is that the five-dimensional ADM energy is not bounded from below. That there's no positive energy resolved, which was conjectured some time ago. And it means the theory is no good. It's unstable.
No.
That's the conclusion. You're not allowed to hand-pick, cherry-pick some solutions and not others.
So let's bring the debate back to the front of the lecture hall here.
Who picked him as the chair? I was refusing, by the way, because I wanted to ask you questions.
One of the things we say in the paper is that, well, here what I'm focusing on is the self-accelerating solutions. And so those are really, they seem to be the source of all these problems. And so one proposal we made is that, if there is a consistent UV completion, or if there is a consistent theory here, then maybe what we have to do is we have to get rid of this class of solutions. And so, we said that in the paper, but at the time when we were writing it, I was thinking that was really, going to be an impossibility. However, there's some new ideas that we've been throwing around, and so that's really what I wanted to share with you, and then you can yell at me about these. But let's think about, what's a UV completion going to do? Well, amongst other things, what it's going to do is it's going to introduce extra higher dimension terms. And so on the brain, I might, as a toy exercise, introduce some extra term that has Ricci, say that Ricci is to somehow higher power.
Then you have higher derivatives.
So I do have higher derivatives, that's right.
Then you're into serious trouble.
Now I'm into serious trouble, that's right. I'm toying with fire. But let's go ahead anyway. Let's see what happens. So here I've got an extra term. It's going to modify the equations of motion. So you can write down some modified equations of motion, which I won't bother you with. And then as a simple exercise, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look for simple symmetric, or namely the Sitter cosmologies, just in an Minkowski background here. And it amounts to finding zeros for some function of Hubble, or the scale in my de Sitter solution. And so here's the first term. This is the extrinsic curvature term. And there's a plus and minus there because there are two branches. There's the self-accelerating branch, the normal branch. This is the term that's coming from the Einstein term. And so, for instance, if I'm on this, normal branch, I start here at zero, I head down, and what that does is it pushes me even further down. What's interesting on the self-accelerating branch is, of course, it turns you down
and it makes you cross zero here. And so this is the self-accelerating bridge. That's that zero there. However, the interesting thing that's going to happen now, or well, the question is, what's this going to do to this set of solutions? Well, if alpha is positive, all it does is it drives these curves down. I'm not going to find anything else happening or anything interesting happening. On the other hand, if alpha happens to be negative, what happens is naturally at large H, out here in this dangerous no man's land of UV theory, turns out I'm going to get a new solution. There's going to be a new self-accelerating solution there. But let's keep cranking up alpha. In fact, what happens is this new solution comes closer and closer. Well, this one's also my lack of ability with the graphics. That one, these two are coming closer and closer to each other. And eventually, what happens is that self-accelerating solution disappears. And so in this particular case then, this is the solution that was causing us problems. It was a self-accelerating brain with an asymptotically flat region. It caused negative energies, yada, yada, yada. That disappeared in this toy model by cranking up alpha to be large enough. So if alpha happens to be negative and it happens to be large enough, there is no self-accelerating brain there.
So that term is way bigger than this is
a very large number. Well,
it's exactly one now.
I mean, we tuned the phenomenology before to make this interesting, but seeing that I threw it away, our intuition about that, what that ratio was supposed to be, we don't have to stick to what I was saying before.
What I'm saying is that those operators that you wrote are there, but they are surfaced by M5, which make them much stronger. And in that case, your alpha would be over the 1.
Right. So if I was out of frame of mind that this ratio was of order 1, then what I'm saying is, in that particular theory, if the coefficient had the right sign, then there is no solution. There is no, in some sense, I've relegated the self-accelerating brain to a UV problem, and this particular class of theories got rid of it. So it's just a toy example of how, well, this preposterous, what I thought was a preposterous idea, that the UV completion is going to get rid of this solution,
might be realized. How, I'm already running over. The extra comment, though, is that, I ignored the normal branch. And the thing that happens now, though, is in this regime here, in fact, I've gotten rid of this problematic self-accelerating brain. But now on the normal, what I'm calling the normal branch, on the branch that, in fact, would describe a closed five-dimensional universe, here's another self-accelerating branch. This one is not, isn't going to suffer from the same problems as before. And so that's, well, that may be something interesting to play with.
You get it from the
I get it from that. So in some sense, it would be like Starobinsky, yes.
But that's how you get the scale, right?
How do I get
the scale?
I'm not going to. What I'm going to say is, what I should have said is, it's a work in progress. And so there's a question there. Is there some interesting phenomenology that you can get out of that brain? Or is it just something that I should regard as junk out of the UV? Some regime where I can't really trust the theory. There are higher derivatives. I've actually swept all sorts of things under the rug. Some of them were commented on here, and other is I don't think I've really ameliorated. I've cheated in that I looked for a very special class of solutions. But in fact, I think there are other solutions around that are going to bite you or lead to the same problems that I had before. However, on a positive note, I defer to my chairman and say that, you know, what I did is I just picked some random term here and I played around with it. And there are various issues that I just ignored, higher derivatives, ghosts, as were mentioned here. a suggestion, or I think a suggestion, I haven't quite distilled it out of this paper, is that effectively what Greg said last Christmas is, if I think about a theory where I'm adding these terms, which are actually dimension two terms, so I'm not really adding higher dimension terms, the theory is really a second order derivatives here. You can also mess up, well, you can change, well, I won't go back there, you can change behavior of the theory and get rid of what I call the problematic self-accelerating branch, and perhaps there's then this other, well, you will get this other term, which may have some interesting phenomenology. So just, this is the same summary slide, the only thing that I've added here is that the techniques, the simple looking at the theory from the higher dimensional point of view does give you a very simple diagnostic. The calculations that we looked at are much simpler than say the perturbation analysis of the fluctuations around the self-accelerating brain. And so it may be an interesting diagnostic to apply to other models to see if there's any obvious problems with those. And with that, I will close. Thank you for your attention.
So you say these phenomena are unstable, so why is the time scale for us?
So what I've shown you is that the spectrum is unbounded from below. We don't have a specific, I haven't done the calculation you're asking for. There's another set of calculations that we did to indicate another instability that would act, well, it was actually restricted in the zero energy sector, which would also sort of, well, would completely destabilize this on a very short time scale.
Much shorter than Hubble.
Well,
just a quick comment about UV completion. So sometimes when you look at theories which have a good UV completion, you might not have a freedom of choosing a sign of bulk.
Sure.
So I think some of the models help. I could be wrong, but I guess in fact to the supergravity, the corrections from this deposit is not. And it's, there are lots of,
I wasn't suggesting that as a supergraph or a particular string model. I was just examining the idea, you know, how preposterous is it that I say that this self-accelerating solution isn't, in fact, a part of a consistent theory. And that's all I wanted to demonstrate, is that it's not that hard to get rid of it.
To what extent is it just straightforward that the energy momentum tensor in the five dimensions doesn't satisfy any positivity conditions, and therefore the conditions to have a positive energy theorem are not satisfied? Is that basically? That's basically what it is. So that's basically.
That's at the root of it.
Yeah, that's
at the root of it.
Yeah. So why is there any reason to believe that adding additional terms is going to fix that? Because what you have to do to fix that is somehow make it that the energy momentum tensor does satisfy some positive energy conditions in a five-dimensional sense.
I did a toy, you know, I presented a toy calculation to just demonstrate how I can remove what I thought was the source of the problems. And I'm not saying that I've produced a consistent theory, but I'm trying to take Scott's perspective that, you know, maybe there's a germ of truth here, and can I imagine, you know,
there are these extrinsic coverage of terms which would be added there, and which can change precisely that feature because.
But would there always be solutions where they were very small and the term coming from the Ricci tensor was large?
Not
therefore, that they, what if you not, if they have, if they're, if you have two terms, and they have, if there's some relative ratio, then you can always choose
because
a solution.
Because one shell terms are related. Because equations of ocean, for instance, there is an equation of ocean here which you get, which is Ricci scalar is related to the square of the extrinsic curvature. That comes from the variation of the action with respect to
lattice.
Exactly. So from as looked from the four-dimensional point of view here. So if you had a extrinsic curvature square, for instance, all of them are bound to be of the same order.
Well, it's true or it's not true. I mean, you have to show it. So I understand what you said, but you still have to show that not just for some solutions, but for every solution.
Yeah, absolutely. But I was presenting the argument against your argument that you were saying that you can nail it. So I guess.
Isn't it possible to add something else which doesn't suffer from binary catastrophe?
Well, so I went very quickly at the end, but that's what the last suggestion was. Yeah.
So there's another thing you can add because of the noise.
Right.
So if you take the effective action, the strain theory, and the multiplier assumption, you truncate it in finite order, you also get unstable solutions to those branches of solutions which are.
Right.
But you know, we don't care about those solutions, right? So, I mean, the fact that the self-accelerating branch is unstable doesn't necessarily mean the ordinary branch is also unstable.
What do you mean you don't care about those solutions?
Well, I don't. I mean, ultimately, we understand that that's just.
What you want to do here then is you're taking the point of view that. Well, I didn't have it here, but you, in some sense, you want to relegate the self-accelerating ring part of the UV junk or the artifact.
Right. So you're quickly getting breaks down for those sections, but not for the others.
Yeah.
Okay. Any more questions? We're going to let's go over here.